Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1079. If you go to ID10T.com, you are very soon going to see some, we're opening a whole vintage t-shirt shop on there. So I, several months ago, found a bunch of really great vintage shirts. Shirts that I'm really probably would own. you have to go buy them, please. I don't need any more t-shirts. I just was like, oh, I like this one, and I like this one, I like this one. Oh, no, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yeah, I'll take that too. And then, but the plan was always to open a vintage shop. But it's real tempting because I sure love vintage t-shirts. So that will be at id10t.com in the next couple of weeks. So go there for that. Sign up for our email list on there while you're there. And we'll notify you of things in a not too intrusive fashion from time to time. All right, let's talk about you now, the ID10T community and the ID10T community corkboard events at id10t.com. Like Brett, who writes, my band Quixote Project released an album last year with a fun theme. Our Kickstarter offered a reward level where you could give us any name and ideas, and we will write you a song. The new album, titled Namesake, is the result of those requests. What started as jingle-style songs turned into something far more personal as people were asking us to help put words and music to the people that they loved. The style is folk music, but dips its toes into reggae, rock, and other styles as the songs needed. We have not been able to go out and promote it, what with a global pandemic canceling live music events, and we hope to get the word out. The music can be found on all streaming sites or check out our site at theqpmusic.com. What a fun idea! Really great idea to get people to give you stuff to write about, that challenge. I mean, that's just a great thing for any writer, you know, like whether it's comedy or a novel or a script or and music in your case. But if someone just challenges you to write something, because sometimes the issue can be you go, God, I can write about anything, but I don't know what to write about. It's sort of like going to google.com and going, I could search for anything, but I don't know what to search about. And so you so you're not too overwhelmed by the infinite choices, then have someone assign you things. That's a great idea. Brett, wonderful idea. I will go check that out. This, oh, events at ID10T.com. I said that in the beginning, but I like to remind people. So there, you've been reminded. This episode is Uncle Ron Perlman. I like to call him Uncle Ron. I love him. He's been on the podcast a bunch. It's always delightful when he's on. It's just such a great mix of, you know, fun but serious and joking and then honest. And I don't know, I just really, I love connecting with him. So anytime Ron Perlman wants to come on the podcast, he certainly can come on the podcast because I do kind of think of him as Uncle Ron now. He's promoting Run with the Hunted, which is on demand June 26th. That is a film. Also, another film called The Big Ugly, which is on demand July 30th. And when I say on demand, I mean on all of the usual platforms where you get your content and you demand to get that content. So there you go. Two movies within a month. Run with the Hunted and The Big Ugly. So this is the ID10T podcast number 1079 with Ron Perlman. And we're rolling the thing. Watch it roll. Hear it roll. Watch it roll with your ears. Because hearing is seeing with your auditory canals.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
It's not crucial for this. I just take the audio from this anyway.
All right, cool. You don't need to see what I look like. I haven't changed. I mean, I have, but just my underwear.
are you safe? Are you home? Are you okay? Like it's, you know, last time I saw you, you know, we got to see each other in person, and those days seem like such a distant memory of being able to actually sit down across a table from someone.
I mean, I'm not sure I would go so far as to say I'm safe. You know, who really is this day and age, you know, especially with all of our proclivities toward expressing ourselves in social media. I'm never safe. I'm as far from safe as I've ever been. But I'm healthy and I'm happy, knocking on wood. And I have been enjoying this this kind of moment. It appears, I never knew this before, but I mean, quarantining is my thing.
You could have quarantined years ago. We didn't know.
Had I only known, I would have. You know, it turns out the only thing I need to come out for is to make a living. And as we all are, I'm finding ways to do that from my house as well. So I don't like hanging around with people anymore. Number one, and number two, I really love sitting around the house and doing absolutely fucking nothing. So, you know, I mean, you know, it's my party, baby.
I mean, there is a theory that's going around that maybe filmmaking will just turn into like essentially solo performances and green screens that are just all cut together somehow.
Yeah, I mean it's kind of concerning to see. I mean, the reason why we don't know the answers to any of this stuff is because this is like the most unprecedented moment, you know, of anyone's maybe ever, you know, in the history of the world, how it redounds to, you know, how we, you know, do various things that we took for granted is, you know, sort of sitting here on the sidelines and watching everybody flail about. Try to imagine a world in which they can, you know, resume doing what they used to do without giving it a second thought. It's been really eye-opening, hasn't it? I mean,
yeah. I mean, just the hardest thing is just not knowing. It's just the big question marks of you.
But
know.
each of the guilds have their own kind of concerns and rules and regulations, and of course the studios have their own concerns and rules and regulations and liability concerns, and you know, it's and then there's like a, you know, like the doomsday crowd that always pops their head up in moments like this and says it's never going to come back to normal. And, you know, it's like, we may as well not even bother, you know, if you can't do a love scene, blah, 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 you know? And so, part of me is sitting here kind of bemused by, the entertainment value of it all. And part of me is scared shitless.
I mean, I guess I just feel like at many times in human history, there's been some type of an event that changed temporarily the way that, I mean, you know, there were massive plagues, you know, that wiped out. And so, but eventually.
But that was pre-MGM.
That was before MGM. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was before.
The musical hadn't been invented yet.
That's right. I don't know. My hope is that you just start releasing a series of home karaoke videos, that you find a way to just start releasing performances in your home. You know, Steve Jones.
Wait a minute. Have you been hacking my emails, Chris?
Are you going to do it? I wish you would.
And I mean, you know, you talk about, what is it when you give away too much information on a show that nobody's seen yet?
Oh,
you're
yeah, spoiler.
You're talking about spoiler alerts. I was looking for a really big announcement, and here we've fucking blown it right before I even get out of the gate.
I'm so sorry. I shouldn't pitch ideas until the end of the show. So then that way we've talked about everything. I go, okay, if we haven't talked about this thing yet, I'm going to pitch.
Let me tell you something. You know, the home karaoke thing, that was a great idea, but there's plenty more where that came from. So there's don't worry about it.
I don't know. I think that might've been it. I might've peaked in the first 10 minutes. This might be it.
Don't you worry about it, pal. There's plenty more.
I don't know why if you Steve Jones, who's a guitarist for the Sex Pistols, has his Instagram feed and he plays songs in his, like, he plays in his shower because the acoustics are really good. So he'll just take the guitar in there and just start, you know, playing and singing songs. And I don't know. I just think, a visual tour of the Perlman Estate might be a fun, you know, you do one song over here, one song over there, one song in the kitchen, one song in the yard, one song in the, you know.
Well, Steve actually might be onto something by playing in the bathroom on his electric guitar. But he, unlike me, doesn't do it with the water running, which adds a whole element of you know, the snuff out idea of, like, you know, auto electro or whatever it's called when you get off on your last moments so that's an idea that I'm running through my people.
I mean, did you have stuff in, were you about to start shooting anything when everything happened, or were you on a break?
I'm in the middle of one. I'm in the middle of a rather large Guillermo del Toro movie, probably 40% of the way shot. I was just about to get on a plane to resume my portion of the shooting in Toronto when the edict came down that they were putting a pin in it temporarily. At that time, that was what, March, sometime in mid-March.
Yeah,
they were hoping for a 2-week break. You know, that was that hope went by the wayside rather quickly. And they're hoping now for a resumption in like mid-September.
September, yeah, that's the date. That's sort of time period that I keep hearing as well. That people are just going, well, September, 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 and yeah, I mean, hopefully that's the case, and hopefully they'll figure out ways to. I mean. The social distancing element, though, not only is going to inform how things are shot, but I think it will largely inform story going forward. I mean, how could it not, right? If you have to physically put people not in proximity to one another, how could it not inform the story?
Is there a way to erase all those surgical masks in post?
There probably is. I'm sure James Cameron could do it. I'm sure ILM might be working on some little app right now that basically just puts a mouth in over the mask. Or we just, or maybe this is just a year where people just have masks and things but don't reference it, and audiences just go, well, we just know that everyone, that's just kind of the way the world is now. Maybe it's just a thing that we ignore. Who knows?
Every time I go out to the store, and, you know, you see, like, every strata of society. L.A. has been pretty good about – I'm in L.A. right now. L.A. has been pretty good about the wearing of the masks and complying with at least L.A. proper. I'm not sure about what happens when you get out of the city limits. I think it's somewhat different. But people have been really, really complying here and you know, being very good citizens. And but you see everything from, like, hip hop stars, you know, to septuagenarians, to everything in between, all wearing a different kind of face adornments.
Yeah,
which is like it's a new form of expression.
Absolutely, it's also it's fashion, it's expression. It's, I mean, you know, like, if these things are basically just they're not just accessories. Actually, they're necessities. You know, it's the first time in my lifetime that something was required. Like, you really need to wear this.
You know, I used to see people in surgical masks, you know, who were just long before there was even the notion of a coronavirus. you know, just for the heck of it, to protect themselves. And, you know, the kind of rancor that just kind of like was brewing inside of me by saying, Jesus Christ, don't you realize you're going to fucking die anyway? And so to have this thing where people are wearing surgical masks, you know, and that's completely overwhelmingly the new normal is, you know, it's just another form of self-amusement, Chris.
Well, we have all had to find ways in the past 3 months. I mean, 3 months, over 3 months now. It feels like everything before March 13th was a year ago, you know, like it just feels like it was so long ago. And I'll be watching movies and, or even commercials, you know, where people are all like crowding into a thing or flooding into an area. And I'm like, oh my God, that's right. We used to be able to do that. It feels like it was a lifetime ago.
I don't know. Are you feeling that, you know, there's a kind of I feel it in me, you know, I'm relaxing the care that I was putting into this initially, you know, I'm just kind of relaxing. And I think me being a native New Yorker and watching the way Cuomo deftly managed what was a nightmarish situation into something that reflected what can happen when there's great leadership. And, but it was a signal like, okay, you know, it's time to resume. It's like it's time to like start relaxing and transitioning into, you know, a return to some sort of a societal non-social distancing reality. And I realize I'm putting myself in great danger by even having that enter into my consciousness, because numbers in LA County are going up and numbers in 19 states are higher than they've ever been. And I mean, it's a conundrum, my friend. It's a real head scratcher, this one.
Yeah. I mean, it is just a wait and see, and that's unfortunate because, you know, we like to convince ourselves that we have these little bubbles of certainty that we live in, and then something comes along and it's like, oh yeah, nothing is really certain. You know, you don't know. I mean, it definitely has, you know, it's certainly made, I think it's sort of making people reflect and sort of think about what's important and what's important in life and balance, and, you know, not putting all of your eggs in the basket of like, oh, I don't exist if I'm not working all the time, or I'm not out doing stuff all the time, or I'm not out going places all the time. I mean, we just have just had to kind of sit with ourselves and, you know, and hopefully reflect. And as I've said since it started, I hope we come out the other side more appreciative and, you know, kinder and more balanced and, you know, all those things that you hope for.
You're bound to have some sort of a major consciousness shift in the early stages of our recovery. I just hope that the things that you're supposed to take away from opportunities like this, because, you know, for me, everything is an opportunity to, if this is what I'm supposed to do now, if I'm supposed to sit around and listen to the sound of my arteries hardening and strip myself bare of the things that I normally measure my, you know, the stint meter on, the, you know, my quality of life, meaning, you know, I'm working, I'm pulling in money, you know, I'm traveling, I'm, you know, all of those things by which you measure yourself in a normal set of circumstances have been ripped from you, and you are forced to go inward, and you're forced to, I mean, those of us who are lucky enough to be able to like financially make it through. I mean, that's one thing, you know, imagine the challenge of like people who were living paycheck to paycheck and had no cushion, and that, you know, and then their little you know, like minimum wage gig that they had or decent wage gig that they had, but not enough to, you know, retire with dignity, is pulled away from them. You know, those people, it's life and death. Those people are like, you're dealing with a kind of mental health challenges that I can't even begin to imagine. So let's just talk about you and me for a second.
No, well, no, you're right, though. And not only is it heartbreaking, but also the idea of you raise an interesting issue of the mental health. Will there be like a mental health crisis by the time, you know, are we in the midst of one, or will it not hit until afterwards of, you know, the sort of the trauma of this, particularly with, you know, being isolated, or like what you're talking about, if people's livelihoods just evaporated immediately, and how are they going to survive, and how are they getting through? I mean, it is a traumatic event. And I really hope that there is a focus on mental health, public mental health, you know, emerging from this, because I think people are going to need, you know, like trying to, as much as everyone wants to just like jump back into the world and get back, we just really, you know, we want, you know, that I think we do have to be mindful that there will be a little bit of a process and an adjustment, a readjustment period when that's allowed. And, you know, hopefully we will be, you know, talking and taking mental health very seriously, because this is affecting, I mean, it's affecting the whole world.
Yeah. The whole world. That's the other thing that's unprecedented, is that there's no border, there's no strata, there's no station in life, there's no place that's safe from when Mother Nature decides to descend upon you. Express herself in ways of great dismay and disdain.
But you, when you were, the last time you were on, you already seemed to have a really good attitude about life and work and everything. And, you know, you said you liked to, work was fun. You know, like it was a blast that you got to do it. There were some things you still wanted to do, but ultimately, you know, your family and, I mean, like your values seemed pretty aligned. It doesn't sound to me like you had to, when quarantine hit, go, boy, maybe I really need to rethink my values. It sounded like they were already kind of focused on your family first, and then the career stuff was all just kind of gravy.
Yeah, but it's a beautiful kind of gravy. I mean, I that is all true. I've reached a point in my life where when forced into a situation like this, where there is no external animating factor, I'm just fine. You know, I've really been going through this with a great deal of positivity and joy, and catching up on some stuff, books and movies and TV things that I kept putting off. So I'm having a great time doing it. But the gravy part is still very much at work, you know, in my, you know, inner turnings and rumblings. And I'm still constantly trying to engage in projects that float my boat and titillate me and make me, you know, bound out of bed in the morning. It's a good place to be, because the fire is still very much lit, but the need for it is diminished greatly. So that's a good combination. I'm a very happy dude, bro.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I really am. I mean, you know, it's kind of strange to think that you first started coming on these podcasts many years ago, and it just, you've always been so gracious and so fun and so funny. And, you know, I think I jokingly called you Uncle Ron the last time you were on, like, oh, you're like Uncle Ron. But I do kind of think of you that way, like, oh, Uncle Ron's coming back on. It'd be great to catch up with him. It's been a while, you know. And
I'm proud to be your Uncle Ron, Chris. I wish you would talk to some of your influential friends and have me be their uncle too, for crying out loud.
I mean, you know, you could be everyone's Uncle Ron. People could just start. I could just say, "Hey, Uncle Ron's on." People
I would not mind going out that way. Uncle Ron, lived a great life. He, blah, blah, blah. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Still got plenty of time.
I wouldn't mind spending the last 40 years of my life, you know, as being uncle to the world.
But when have you had sort of a pattern or have you created a home structure in quarantine? Do you get up at the same time every day? Did you sort of build something that sort of felt like a structure to occupy your time, or can you just sort of sit around and go moment to moment?
It's more the latter. Very, very. I mean, you know, I still, I'm not sleeping in like you would think. I mean, I, you know, if I went back to my original way, which was to like go to bed at 4 o'clock in the morning and wake up at 11:30 a.m., I haven't done that in years. Nor has that kind of kicked back in, you know, under these circumstances. In other words, I'm finding reasons to get up out of bed, catch up on what's going on with the world, find out who I am within the melees and how maybe I could be helpful, check in with my friends, you know, do my little home version of trying to stay in shape. So I'm filling up the time, but it's in like, I'm going to do all of those things when I want to, how I want to. And there's really no structure other than the complete, like, okay, what's next? And it's kind of very organic because it's not imposed. It's not preconceived. It's happening as it happens, which is also, you know, quite refreshing. And that's the answer to your question. Yes.
Well, what advice do you have for people as Uncle Ron? What advice do you have for people who are having a hard time dealing without structure? I mean, like some people really do rely on, they just need to know, you know, where to go and what to do, you know, from 8 to 8 and without anything, without a job or without someone saying like, okay, be here from this time to this time and do this and turn this in. I mean, obviously some people are managing to work from home, but is there any sort of, good life/spiritual advice you would give to people who are struggling with the lack of structure that they might have in their lives?
Listen, I mean, you know, everything that I say is going to sound trivial and trite and like something you'd find in a really shitty Chinese restaurant fortune cookie. You know, the ones that say, life is great. That's not a fortune, motherfucker. That's just something you stuck in a cookie. But I don't remember your question, Chris, but I know it was I think I do remember it. Listen, I feel like, I touched on this earlier, you know, I think that everything that's challenging is an opportunity to add another layer of greatness to your arsenal of how you navigate through this life. And the more challenging, the greater the opportunity. Now, you know, the caveat being, if you're living paycheck to paycheck and you don't have any resources, I don't know what to tell you, man. I just pray for you. I hope you figure out a way to stay safe and, you know, keep groceries coming in and keep a roof over your head. But, you know, aside from that, in terms of being someone who has relied on external things to provide them with a schedule when you wake up, when you have your three meals, you know, what kind of free time do you have? What do you do with that free time? You know, and then all of that is kind of like pulled out from under you. This is the opportunity to find out what it is you think that's truly important in this life. What are the causes? What are the values? What are the things, whether it's, you know, entrenching yourself deeper in family, whether it's entrenching yourself deeper in some sort of philosophical thing that you always wanted to, you know, become adept at but never had the chance, whether it's writing your own script rather than depending on the outside. In other words, you know, turning inward, and not leaving the room until you've answered the question, like, what floats my boat? And
right.
Now that I have all this opportunity to pursue that, how can I, you know, make every single day a chance to get closer to the things where ultimately I will find my bliss? And that would be my recommendation.
I mean, it's a good one, because so much of the time, especially in a pre-corona world, because of all of the things that there were in the world and the outside world to distract us, you know, you just sort of, you kind of just get on autopilot. You go, and it's easy to forget why you're going all the time. And then all of a sudden you can't, and you're right. You have to turn inward and really ask yourself those questions. Now, it's not an easy process, and I'm certainly not saying it's a simple thing to do, but taking that opportunity and trying to explore some of those ideas and explore some of those bigger philosophical things that you probably didn't really have the opportunity to think about before, it's an interesting concept, because I just feel like it's not something that a lot of us really had the time to do before. And so it'll be interesting to see if on the other side of this, if a lot of people completely have vocation changes, because like, oh, I realized I actually didn't even like the thing I was doing before, so I started this new thing. This was an opportunity to, you know, because people change, you know, like the things you started doing when you were younger, you may not be into anymore.
And a lot of the times, those things that they were making a living at doing, even though they were, whether they were happy at it or unhappy at it, or just coasting, or just doing it to keep, you know, the rent paid, those things, a lot of them are going to go away. I mean, if you do go out into the street and drive up and down your favorite thoroughfare, and you realize the venerable old chain stores, chain businesses that have gone under, you know, Barney's has gone under, Neiman's gone under, Pier 1 Imports. I mean, that just driving down the road, just going, my God, if there was ever a signal to, like, create a world for yourself where you take nothing for granted, where you, you know, appreciate every single good thing that you have in your life, because there's nothing that's guaranteed. And there's no promise of tomorrow with regard to the things that you depend on interfacing with. You know, that's what we're seeing. And, you know, it's a wake up call for real, but it's also the opportunity to be a great wake up call for those who choose to say, okay, well, shit, man, you know, everything's gone. Why don't I figure out really what I want to do and make it happen? And right. I certainly have the time. You know, I certainly am not any better off or worse off than anybody else by completely starting from scratch, because all of us are unemployed. I mean, you know, there are, like you say, there are a huge mass of people that are working from home, but there's a huge mass that's not. And, you know, not, in the essentials column.
Have you written anything in quarantine? Have you tried to create something in quarantine? Have you felt creative in that way, or are you just kind of letting it go and letting it flow and letting it be?
No, there's a few projects that I can't write. I can't write to the great failing of mine, because I'm there's nobody who appreciates the written word more than me, and yet I've been deprived of being able to be a guy. I write really good emails and grocery lists, and occasionally a decent tweet. But if it's over 140 characters, you know, you got to call somebody else.
Got it.
But there's a lot of great ideas that have come through that I'm I'm working on advancing. There's a couple of pet projects of mine that I've been, you know, working on advancing and figuring out like when we can jump back into things, you know, trying to have things that are ready. So yeah, I've been creatively very, very active and happy at that. But also, it's a kind of a satisfaction that comes from the fact that I'm working on things that fascinate me, you know, that are not simply things that I feel like are going to be a good career move or a good money play. You know, these are things that like are personally enriching, and it's really cool. There's no guarantee that they'll ever get done, but you know, I've come to find out that the process, the result is way overrated. The journey, the process of working on things that you love, that is where all of the joy comes from. You know, and when it's over, whether it was well received or not, you just kind of go, well, Jesus, now what do I do?
Yeah. Oh my God. It's the idea of the result being overrated. You know, that is such an important thing for people to absorb, because we get so goal driven and then you sort of forget like, well, I think a goal is really just a direction. It's just something to aim at, but it's like the thing itself, that result, you're right. Because number one, you can't control how the result turns out. You can't control how it's received. You don't even really feel it for more than a half a second once you've completed the thing, you know? And you're absolutely right of focusing more on the journey of getting there. That's where all the meat lies, but we just seem so focused on, no, that thing, I need to acquire that thing. And we really need to be focusing more on like, what is this trip we're taking along the way, and what is it making of us, and what are we learning? You're right. The result doesn't necessarily teach you that much of anything. It's just sort of like it's a checkbox to mark off.
You know, and in our business, results of things are so skewed toward a non-realistic, you know, reality.
Right.
You know, the perception of what's hot and what's not, the perception of what's good and what's not, the perception of what's commercial and what's not, what's going to make money and what's not, what's going to, you know, put you into that, you know, higher percentile of actors or performers or writers or singers or comedians or whatever it is that you choose to do, you know, that's going to put you in that new strata that's going to make you busier and more in demand and richer and all those things. You know, the set of values that dictate your success with relation to what I just kind of listed off is bullshit. I mean, it's complete fucking, you know, and you know, when you talk about worshiping false idols, I mean, you know, the things that pass for success are as fleeting and as paper thin as they've ever been in the history of the world. And so if you're going to, you know, yeah, it's really great when society moves you along and gives you a greater audience and a greater influence meter and a greater, you know, number attached to each job you do. And, you know, it's great. Don't get me wrong. But I'm also saying, if you are aiming for that kind of, if you're engineering your life and aiming for the kind of success that society has deemed, you know, hip and cool, well, you finish the sentence, Chris. I can't.
I think it's because you said it's a paper thin thing. So you're aiming for an empty thing. It's an empty thing that is built on, because I think I know exactly what you're saying or what you're talking about, because if you're going for the acclaim and the all that stuff you were talking about, the fame level or whatever, it's that's not about you. That's how others perceive you. So you're basically chasing other people's perceptions of you in an elevated way. And that's kind of an empty pursuit because it's not because that doesn't make it about you or what your passions are. And I do find that the most interesting careers are the ones where people's careers zigzag and they take interesting turns. And then you go, oh, I think they just were really interested in this thing. And not all of it made a ton of money and not all of it was noticed and not some of it was shit on. But when you kind of look back at the tapestry of what made their career, you really see this beautiful, interesting journey that was sort of a personal diary of who they were and not... You know, you don't want the diary of who you were to be chasing fame. That's gross because it doesn't mean anything, you know?
Right,
and I think when people do just try to pursue that and then they get it, you know, that's like they get depressed because it's not what they thought it was, you know? Because again, the result isn't, it's not, the result shouldn't be the goal, you know? So I hope I did that. I hope I said that the right way. Does some of that?
Well, I hope you did too. Because you know you're my nephew and I'm you know
yes,
I have very
yes.
high hope I very have very high hopes for you
by the way yeah. As a proud nephew I do have to say two movies coming out Ron Perlman two movies in a month of each other within a month you How got Run that? With the Hunted coming out June 26th and The Big Ugly coming out July 31st two movies
yep I think, you know, and this is the other thing that you really, really must bear in mind, Chris, is that if you live long enough, all of your competition dies and you get to work more often.
So you're just, so it's a longevity, there's a longevity play.
Totally. In my case, totally.
Yeah. So Run with the Hunted is June 26th. And then a month later, The Big Ugly as well will be available everywhere on demand. July 31st.
That's a whole show, by the way, Chris, about the devolution of the receiving process of cinema.
Right.
It was already completely gone to shit before the virus, but now there's this excuse to not go to the theaters anyway. I mean, we were all headed toward, you know, if I can't get it in my living room, why bother? You know, but that's a whole different discussion.
Well, it is because there already was sort of, I feel like there was sort of a spoken and maybe not as much spoken. I don't know if it was a joke or an idea of like, hey, if you're not making like a superhero movie, why bother putting it in the theater? You know, like that before all of this happened, because you know, there are those movies that feel like, oh, they're event movies and you need to see it on the big screen. And then there's stuff where I guess people just feel like, yeah, I don't really need to leave my house, you know? And now people are like, I can't really leave my house, or maybe it's not, you know, maybe.
But it was trending toward, you know, what with the advent of Netflix and Amazon Prime and now Hulu and Apple and, you know, all of these things that are delivery systems straight to your living room. It was trending toward everything going that way anyway. Whereas they started out as being kind of poor relations to what the big studios were putting out, now they're the big studios and they're putting out the best shit with the best talent, all the way from writers to directors to producers to actors, etc. And so that's where we were headed. You know, this notion of how, you know, you and I grew up where, you know, you, if it's a movie, it comes out on a certain date and you go find out what theater is playing in near you and you go see it. And if you're as old as I am, you are mourning the death of what I just described because it's no longer a thing. It's no longer a thing. And the only way it's a thing is if you make such a big tentpole movie and you can have $50 million worth of advertising in your budget in order to get people to leave their house and go to the theater because they have just been whipped into a frenzy that they got to go see this. But that's the only way that happens.
I do have this hope that when it is okay for everyone to flood theaters again, that people are going to, because it's been taken away for so long, I really do think people will miss it. I think people will be eager to be able to get together in groups and have these kind of shared communal experiences because we haven't really had the option to do that in so long. So
I hope you're right, because I mean, some of my greatest memories, at the end of a really challenging day or a bad day or a day where you got some bad news is, you know, you take your girlfriend or your significant other or your kids and you go buy some popcorn, sit in a dark theater and just like laugh your ass off, or just, you know, have your mind blown by great, you know, thought and imagery and things that art form availed you. And so I hope you're right. I just it would be a great shame. You know, and the thing of it is, you know, people who don't know something don't miss it. But guys like me who knew it really miss it. So I hope I hope you're right. I hope it comes back in a big way and redefines itself and, you know, and gets a really great footing back in the things that we cherish. Because, you know, the whole conversation we've been having so far is, I would imagine that part of the return to whatever the new normal is going to be is making sure that we have come to terms with the things that are really important and that we really cherish, and making them part of our everyday lives, instead of just, you know, kind of walking around like automatons and assuming that all that's going to be done for us.
Yeah, I really do hope it is an appreciation for people and experiences and shared communal experiences over things, you know, over things and status or whatever. I mean, it's because, you know, we're all we've got.
Yes, right.
So, you know, things can come and go, but you know, the people in your lives are and those shared communal experiences too. Like I am a homebody, and my wife and I don't mind being at home. Like, you never had to twist our arm to not go anywhere. But, you know, like being in a comedy club, like I really miss seeing a bunch of being in a group of people and watching people laugh and sort of have a shared experience. And, you know, like it's that, I do think that is important for human beings because we're communal. Like, I don't think we're supposed to be isolated creatures. I think we are supposed to have shared communal experiences. And so I do believe that when it is by and large allowed again, and when it's okay, I do think there will be a resurgence of that after probably some initial agoraphobia, because I think on a cellular level, we crave it.
Yeah. So true. So true. And this is why, you know, we love our sports and we love our concert halls and we love our theaters and we love, we love places where we can, you know, be part of this crazy frenzied communal excitement about something, and look to the guy to your left and look to the chick to your right and go, isn't this fucking mind-blowing?
Yeah, no. I mean, you know, I know I mention this always when you come on the podcast, but when I think about those old days of going to the Brass Monkey and seeing you get up and do karaoke, and, you know, like just even that idea of like, oh man, that was such a, I hope I didn't take that for granted. All those things were just felt so like, let's just go to karaoke tonight, whatever. You know, that just felt so disposable of like, we can do this. It's no big deal. You know, and now I go, oh my God, it'd be so much fun to be able to go to a karaoke place and everyone get up and do songs and kind of encourage each other and laugh and be able to hug. Like you know, like that stuff. And I know it'll come back. And I hope that when it does, that we take a pause and just remember, like, these are the sweet, beautiful moments of life where we get to come together. We have the privilege to come together to do these things as a group, and and celebrate each other, and you know, like that I do miss that stuff.
Mm.
Which is why Ron Perlman's home karaoke show is going to tide me over until this is all over.
Well, it won't be the same as like if you see it in a bar.
No, I know.
And you know, you got some asshole up there trying to sing Sinatra, and if you look to your left, some other asshole falling off a bar stool. you know, not really. That adds to the fun. I mean, I could probably figure out how to get that in to my home version somehow. I have plenty of friends who are happy to fall off a bar stool at any given time.
You know, we could cut it together in a way. Like if you got a couple different people on Zoom, you could sort of cut it to where you're kind of like nodding to different people in the quote room. And then we just sort of cut in like the guy falling off the stool at the bar, a guy passing out at a table. Yep. You know, two people arguing at the back table. Like, we could cut all that together.
Right. Oh, yeah. We got people.
Is there anything, you know, I've enjoyed kind of ending the podcast episodes on, you know, the most hopeful notes possible for folks, you know, especially.
Well, you've come to the wrong guy, Chris.
I don't believe that. You're an optimist at heart. I believe it. I believe you're an optimist. I believe that you believe in the good of everything. And I think you seem like a hopeful person. Like you hope for the best for the world. And what are you hopeful about now? What's bringing you joy?
Joy. Jesus. Joy. What's bringing me joy? You know, I can't characterize, the overriding, sentiment of anything good that you're taking out of these times as joyful, because there's just too much reckoning that's happening right now. You know, the what's going on in the streets, you know, the reckoning of the 400 years of, you know, the original sin, and what's going on politically, and, you know, how toxic and poisonous the division is between those who think one way and those who think a different way. And then, of course, the coronavirus, and, you know, you're seeing nothing but sobering statistics. The numbers are truly staggering, and you're seeing a moment in our political history where you finally have nobody at home to deal with the problem. You know, they're not just asleep at the wheel. There is no wheel. Unfortunately, I next time I come on, I hope I have a more joyful assessment of what to take away from this, but maybe the joyful assessment is that in the same way as that we started out the conversation, you know, what, 3-4 hours ago?
Yeah, at least.
You know, everything is an opportunity to be better. And, if you don't, look at the world that way, that you got, like all of the things that I just kind of listed, have a real kind of negative gravitas to them. But if you don't say, okay, if that's the hand I'm dealt, how do I go all in and win the pot? And there's a way to do that, you know. It just depends on what your attitude is and what energy you're willing to apply. And so the joy of it all is that we have this opportunity right now to fix some stuff and to make a better world way for our kids. And I'm sorry I wished I had a better answer for that.
You know what? That's a beautiful answer, actually. And it's an honest answer. And, you know, my apologies if the question was even idiotic to begin with. I, for people who feel overwhelmed, who feel overstretched emotionally and sort of, you know, maybe just looking for nuggets of, you know, something, you know, hopeful to grasp onto in a time, you know, of, you know, of everything that's going on in the world these last 3 months. And I think the idea of, can we make a better world for our kids, is an incredibly hopeful and joyous sentiment. And so, you know, I don't think you need to say like, oh, I'm sorry, that wasn't a moment of joy. I think that was a beautiful answer.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. You're my favorite nephew.
I adore you, Uncle Ron.
You'll always give your old uncle a pass, and I love that about you, Chris.
Well, I know, because it's, you know, I don't know. I've just always kind of felt like a, hey, that guy. I love that guy. I really hope I get to see that guy more often. You know, like, there's, whenever it comes up that you want to come on the podcast, I'm always excited, because I don't know, like, I always feel enriched by our conversations. They're fun and they're silly and they're serious and authentic, but philosophical at the same time. And so, yeah, I don't know. I never, all I know is that every time I sit down with you, I just expect, like, it's going to be fun and interesting and enlightening. And I don't know. I really enjoy our talks. It would be fun to have talks, maybe even not on the podcast sometime, just checking every once in a while. Hey, Uncle Ron, how you doing? What's going on? What's on your mind?
Listen, I remember when I got invited to the Nerdist for the first time, and I had to embarrassingly, get the balls to ask some of my nearest and dearest, like, do you know what a podcast is?
Is that a real thing?
I had no idea what a podcast was. I imagined some sort of, like, you know, horror movie with these things that gave birth to, you know, mutated, like, you know, village people.
Right.
No, things, yeah, that came out of some pod, you know.
Pod, like, people.
There was a movie about that, wasn't there? There's probably genre of movies about.
There's a whole genre of movies about that. Yeah, of pod people, and it felt that way in the early days. That it felt like we were, when people didn't, it was the exact thing. They didn't know what a podcast was. It felt like we were pitching them pod people. They're like, "What is this? What?"
Yeah, but we go that far back, where first of all, the very first quote unquote podcast I was ever on was thanks to your gracious invitation on the Nerdist. And which led to a series of beautiful revisitations for the two of us. But, you know, I don't want to make news, but I think I'm about to launch my own pretty soon.
What? Oh, my God. This is great, because I poked at you about that the last time you were. I'm like, you should do a podcast. And you're like, I don't know. Like, you seemed like you were kind of waffling about it. So this is really terrific news. Interesting.
Well, I found out you can do it from your house and you don't have to put on pants. So
you do not have to. No, you could just do it in a robe. Like, you could just lie in bed. You could wake up in the morning, hit record on the thing, still lie in bed, and technically do a podcast.
You can do it in a robe or in nothing at all, my friend.
You could do it in nothing at all. However, because it's just audio only, there are some video podcasts, but I really like the audio podcast.
Yeah. I like to mix it up, though. I think my podcast is going to be one with absolutely no format. You know, where you'll never be able to categorize what it is that the fuck this guy is going to do. So it's going to be zany, and I'm going to
have a name.
I'm going to
have a name.
I do have a name, and we're really making news now, because this has not been announced on any level whatsoever, but it's called Without the Birdseed, a Ron Perlman podcast.
Fantastic. I'm glad you're doing this. I'm glad you're doing well. And I'm glad that you are maintaining well in, you know, in just the state of the last 3 months and being isolated and still finding, you know, still finding things to do, and I just appreciate you, Ron Perlman. I really do. And you're welcome to the podcast anytime.
I appreciate how far back we go and the fact that we're still kicking and we got so much more to do and say. And big hug, Chris. Big hug.
Big hug to you too, Uncle Ron. I hope to talk to you soon. Run with the Hunted is on demand June 26th and The Big Ugly is on demand July 31st. So I hope to see you in person someday soon and give you a big hug, man.
Absolutely.
All right.
Regards to everybody, brother.
You as well. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.